The African National Congress turns 113 today. We speak to United Independent Movement President Neil de Beer, who spent 34 years in the African National Congress. Welcome, Neil.
Yeah, Chris, good to be back. Happy New Year, all the happies. With the amount of people emailing us to say, when are you back? It feels good to just do the snippet. Obviously back on Sunday now, the new year, and look forward to very busy buzz news every Sunday on this platform, keeping two things in mind, only the truth and blatantly so. So good to see you.
You too, Neil. Yesterday, Deputy President Paul Mashatile was chased out of a house in Khayelitsha. How symbolic is that of the state of the party?
Yeah, symbolic and tragic. I've now seen that video go viral. And Chris, I think the mood is summarized by that one man carrying his child into his mother's house. And we now find out that the reason is that he was in a way abused by the security personnel. Again, Vice President Paul Mashatile's security detail in the news. And then afterwards, he tries to calm the situation and explain to the mother and to the son that he apologized. But the mere fact that the second most senior citizen in the ANC is asked to leave a ANC stalwart's house summarizes it to the point where we now know that this party, founded in 1912, 113 years old today, is broken, and that is as clear as that.
Now, Neil, you were still in the inner circle in the party when the cracks started showing. Tell us what first alerted you to the downward spiral.
Well, I wouldn't say it is a thriller of a journey, a trilogy of mishaps. But Chris, you've got to go back. I think being a person that loves history, you must look at history. And you must look at where this party comes from. It's 113 journey, was founded in 1912 as of 8 January. And funny enough, it was found in Mangaung in Bloemfontein. And it wasn't called then the ANC. It was then the South African National Collective of Parties. That's why it's the African National Congress. So it was first a entity founded to find a structure to amalgamate all the entities in 1912 to fight for black liberation. What a journey, because in 1955, it then adopted what we now call their own constitution, the Freedom Charter in Soweto. And if you look at our current constitution, because there are little highlights that you can see is highlighted in the Freedom Charter as based in the constitution. Where we saw the unification of liberation, the Mandela face as being the one globally, was that time when they amalgamated to be one of the biggest liberation movements in the world. Today, they are the oldest liberation movement in the world. And Chris, what happened was 94 came because of global pressure. I still tell you today, fast forward, 94, the ANC got freedom by surprise. I say that because they weren't ready. Make no mistake. Kodesa came as a surprise, and the National Party under Rolf Meyer and de Klerk were ready, and the ANC was still trying to get its cadres to come back into the country to negotiate. But that was the era, may I say, no matter anybody's opinion, because I was there, because you were there. It was the golden era of the ANC. It was an era where Nelson Mandela became an icon of the world. He got a Nobel Peace Prize and shared that with Evia de Klerk. The South African passport in 1994 was probably one of the most acceptable passports in the world. We could travel anywhere without a visa. And Mandela, that 5 years, was called the golden era of the democracy of this country. But, Chris, here it starts. The first cracks was the jailing, the incarceration of two ANC stalwarts. So that's when the crack started. They jail Alan Busak. They send Alan Busak to jail. Alan Busak, this icon of the UDF, this man that was an iconic domestic fighter on the same level as Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who marched in the streets, who started the internal revolution. Alan Busak goes to jail. And then Tony Yengeni, another MK stalwart, a commander in MK, is sent to jail. And both of them, Chris, ANC stalwarts, and both of them jailed because of financial irregularity. That's Neil de Beer's opinion when the first cracks started to show of the belly of the beast being exposed on the one side. The golden era could not patch that up. Because if you could jail Alan Busak and you could jail Tony Yengeni, the people were saying, well, we are going into a justice system that works as well. So another era of understanding, not just freedom, but the mere fact that you could jail people because they were committing fraud or a crime. And then, Chris, we tumble past Mandela's Kool-Aid, the Rugby World Cup, the iconic ideology that nothing could go wrong. But Mandela says, I will serve one term only. And then Mbeki comes in. Mbeki takes over, Chris, the same ship. There's nothing changed in the ANC. A new captain. Please, we've got to understand that. And it's relevant today. The ANC ship has not changed. Its brand is there. The color is there. The Freedom Charter is in existence. Nothing changed of the ship. Except they gave them a new captain. So, Chris, when you ask me, where did the cracks come? Where did I see? I saw it when the weapons scandal, the arms deal scandal, erupted and exploded in Parliament. Two stalwarts go to jail, not for the same reason. Yengeni directly linked to the weapons scandal, and Alan Busak because they said that he committed fraud, etc. I think that's where we started to see that this ANC is not just gold and merry, and that there would be problems.
Now, Neil, what was the catalyst for you to turn your back on the ANC?
Yeah, Chris, it's you know, I explained that so many times to people that, make no mistake, when I was a young man and I left school, I did what I did for the National Party. There's no denying that. My history. I went from school to the army. And I went to go fight. You know? Volkom Vaderland. Oswood Verlet Donner. Because that was the enemy. You know? We had to fight the Red Gevaar, the communists, the Antichrist. So I went from school desk to Angola. And I gave my 2 years. We fought there. You know? Many didn't come back. So I'm a war veteran of the apartheid era. And after that, I joined the policing agencies, as you know, because we had to keep this going, because we had to protect ourselves. Now, there's a lot of denialists out there, because sometimes I tether on calling them cowards when I tell them, hey, Don't hide away if you were supporting the National Party. Don't hide away because you were attending Eugene Terblanche's meetings in halls. Don't deny the fact that you were an absolute white supremacist. It's you. You know, stop denying it. You hated them. You fought in the wars. You were there. You were supporting apartheid. Be proud in the sense of being the truthful one. Because, Chris, what everybody now does, sorry, is they keep quiet. Jy vir nasionale party gestem. Did you go to the AWBB meeting? Seems everybody was Helen Suzman's followers now. No, you weren't. It's part of history. And a part of fixing history is when you don't deny. You say, yes, in those days I supported it. Because I supported it. I supported it so much that in the propaganda, I gave 2 years of my life and I went to go fight to keep a national party system alive. I can't deny it. I've got photos on me. So that's it, Chris. But what happened to me, and there's a book out there called Undercover with Mandela Spies, which explains extensively my journey between going from school, going into the army, going into the policing service, and then, Chris, the sporadic change where I find out some stuff of Mandela, some stuff that was hidden away from us as uniformed members. And I make that sporadic change to decide that we cannot continue fighting against this onslaught and defend apartheid anymore. And I realized as a young man that our leaders were surrendering, that the generals were walking over. And it was my decision to then say, well, if this country de facto is going to be taken over by the ANC, to whom will the ANC speak? To whom will they talk? So if Nelson Mandela sits in a lounge and he says, tomorrow morning we're going to do the following 10 laws that will affect white South Africans, Chris, to whom would he talk? Who would he ask? Who would be the reference to say, but Neil, jy's gebore op 'n plaas. You're a white South African. What do you think would happen if we do that? And that's what happened. We formed IWOP, and we joined the peaceful transition. And Chris, that was the reason I joined, because of Mandela's relationship and reconciliation. But then what happened was we went through presidents and era. And I noticed, slowly but surely after Mbeki, the whole Zuma cabal slaughtered the ANC's principle. We went through Zuma. We went into Cyril. And that's when I realized, Chris, that as much as what I defended in my youth, the apartheid system, I was now starting to have to defend the ANC on basically the same scenarios of breaking the trust, breaking what they stood for, destroying the Mandela dream, and sacrificing the Freedom Charter. And again, Chris, you can say what you want. I'm a man of principle. I'm a man of honor. I am loyal to my country. And when I realized that this ANC is no longer the Luthuli House, the Mandela, the Walter Sisulu, the Governor Mbeki era, I decided to leave and fight them. Because injustice remains injustice, no matter the color of your T-shirt or the emblem of your party. And that's why I left.
Neil, okay, we've spoken about the cracks, but who or what do you think has done the most damage to the party? Who can be credited, if that is the right word, for breaking it?
Oh, undoubtedly the Zuma era. Because interesting, when you look at the presidents, you know, you've got to go into the inner beast. This hour we are spending today is dissecting the inner beast of the ANC, which I served 34 years in and out. You've got to first understand the beast that you hunt. Jy kan nie gaan krol visies jag en dan duikers skiet nie. You got to know what you want. You know, we used to call it know your enemy. In business now, you call it know your opposition. I know them. Oh, trust me, I know them. It was a great organization. It was a fantastic organization because we knew our enemy. You see, Chris, for an organization to totally unify, history tells us that you first have to identify a common enemy. Once you get a populace to start focusing and joining on the focused enemy, you can then unite anything. After uniting them against the common enemy, you've got to continue spreading news, propaganda, how bad this enemy is for all, how good you are against the enemy. Pre-apartheid, the ANC chose apartheid as the common enemy. But after 94, what was the common enemy? You see, the ANC could not make the transition. Chris, here it is. On BizNews, Chris and Neil. Statement. The African National Congress, in the 30 years that they now govern, could not make the transition between liberation movement fighting a common enemy to a successful government. Because the actual enemy that they needed to focus on today is poverty, the economy, and they can't do it. We had Mandela, and nothing actually happened in the Mandela era to advance the meat and potatoes. It was just, thank you. That's what we had. We had Madiba. Then we had Mbeki, the massive failure of AIDS, the massive slander that HIV does not cause AIDS, the destructive failure in his term not to roll out ARVs. His distinctive attitude that he needed to run it. And I'll tell you, Mbeki was not a Democrat. He was a bureaucrat. That we know. Didn't see his term through. Then we had this scandal where we saw Zuma coming up, but all his court cases bringing South Africa onto the front line for the exact wrong reason, where Zuma decided to become president, but first had to free himself of justice. The strategic implementation of, and people forget, Kgalema Motlanthe. People forget that Kgalema Motlanthe was the third president of this republic, although he was only the president for a year. In other words, he was put there so that he could keep the seat warm for Jacob Zuma. Then Zuma takes over. So again, Chris, Mandela, one term. Mbeki, 1.5 term. Kgalema Motlanthe, not even a term. And then Jacob Zuma, by hook or crook, beats everybody and gets the seat as president. And who does he make as deputy president? Our friend Saul ends up as VP. But we'll get there. Jacob Zuma. When Jacob Zuma took the seat, I'm telling you, everybody loved him. Yeah, what does work? Because he had charisma. You know, he was this guy. He was dancing. He was talking. And everybody said, right. Yeah, we've got a good guy. What a mistake. And then Zuma and his era brings in the rehashing of Shabir Sheikh, who goes to jail, but he's terminally ill. And he set out to spend his deathbed on a golf course. And then the eruption of the Guptas, a massive onslaught of the Guptas in public. So the brand Zuma starts to be tainted after being so charismatic. Tainted in such a way that it becomes a tumor, a cancer growing in this country. A free-for-all a lute for all. And that's when the era came where we broke. We broke as a country. We started to be refused our passports. The one in 94 you could go to anywhere is now being refused one by one. And Chris, here's a bombshell I'd like to tell you. You see, people don't understand intelligence. I want to quickly tell you something that no one actually knows. Jacob Zuma does not have to go through the weapon scandal trials and the looting trials that he's going through now. He was already implicated in a judgment by a judge on record. Now, Chris, go back to the judgment against Shabir Shaikh. The day that judge found him guilty and sentenced him, in her record of judgment, there's a paragraph that annihilates, implicates, destroys the credibility of Jacob Zuma. And the paragraph reads that there is credible information and proof and evidence that Mr. Jacob Gelihlekle Zuma was in a clear, corrupt relationship with Shabir Shaikh. Close quote. No one, Chris, in the past 25 years has ever gone back as the NPA, as justice, and said, wait a minute, Jacob Gelihlekle Zuma, in a judgment of the High Court of a judge, is implicated in a de facto evidence of a corrupt relationship. But they send Shabir to jail at that stage, and that paragraph gets lost in translation. That's interesting. So, Chris, that is where the real cracks came, is when we started to have presidents not finishing two-year terms. Not one. Not one president. Mandela, because of his own accord, that we must give him. Mbeki removed in his second term by the ANC. Kgalema, 1 year. Not of his own accord, in my opinion. He was told to keep that seat. Jacob Zuma fired in term two. Didn't see his term through. And now Cyril, I fear, I predict, might also not see two terms after the 2027 election. Can you believe that this ANC, 113 years, has never delivered a president that could serve the full democratic two terms? That's another problem, Chris. And that's shocking. People must know that.
Well, the party is now not only having to fight factionalism, but also having to deal with an increasing number of voices of dissent from within the party. The latest one being that political Casanova, Tony Ngeni. It seems that the SG is on regular reprimand duty. But something like this would have been unthinkable once, Neil.
It was totally unthinkable. Because can I quickly tell you from the inside of the beast? There was never there was a vote and there was an election, but there was never a contestation of the leadership of the ANC in the pre-94 era. I don't know if people know that. The African National Congress has always known clearly, crystal, who the next leader is. They knew that Mandela sitting on Robben Island could not be the president of the ANC because he's not outside, but irrespective, he was the president in waiting. Oliver Tambo, on 3 to 4 occasions, refused the presidency, but at the end of the day, he had to take it. So O.R. Tambo was not elected He wasn't nominated. He wasn't contested. He was told. And he accepted it. Mandela comes out. There's no vote. There's no conference. Mandela is the president. And then as the system went on, normally the ANC system was, the vice president of the ANC becomes the president. Hence, Mbeki. Not accepted by everybody, trust me. Not everybody supported that. But he became the president after Mandela. Now, Chris, right there, we break tradition. Right there, the first major political policy cracks of the party starts when suddenly there's contestation. And Mbeki is contested. And then after that, Zuma is contested, and Tetra and Tetra. So in the middle of democracy, the ANC suddenly had to understand this is now a democracy. And because in my opinion, because I was there, there was a massive problem with that. Because the comrades, the branches, the people out there that make the ANC suddenly found themselves in a scenario they had to choose. Now they had to campaign. They had to start finding strategies. And then they realized there's one thing they also need. Money. They needed money. And that brought another crack into the ANC because they were never going out there in the previous, as you know, times to contestate, to put different pictures of people on their T-shirts and to lobby and to pay people. They found themselves now there. And the question will be now that they did that, who paid them? Who were the first people approached by factions? The Zuma faction, the CR faction, the Mbeki faction, who were they? And that brought in another facet of fiscal abuse. So, Chris, the ANC started showing itself in an unexplored road. And therefore, I can tell you one of the biggest failures of this ANC, and this is no lie, is that the three strongest bastions within the ANC that made the ANC was the Youth League, the Women's League, and MKVA, the real Umkhonto-we-Sizwe Veterans Association. And Chris, you had massive leaders in the ANC Youth League, the Peter Mukabas, that kind of level. But since Julius left, this is clear. This is not anything but truth. The last credible, sporadic, dynamic, crazy, out there, uncontrollable leader of the ANC Youth League was Julius Malema. And when Malema left, the Youth League collapsed. They are a non-entity. You don't hear of them. The Women's League collapsed. And Cyril Ramaphosa disbanded MKVA, and that's a fact. Without those three structures of the ANC, they will never recover, and they never have. And that is the problem you've got now. Is this ANC, let's fast forward to today, is ripped apart, it's destroyed, it's sunk, it has rust, it has enemies. It is internally and externally being slaughtered piece by piece. And that is where we are today when this new SG, Bakile Mbalula, has now risen in the past 5 days as well, Chris, as now blatantly being wanting to contest also in 2027. And that's where we are with this caucus. What they're going to celebrate on Saturday, God only knows.
Thank you. That was Neil De Beer, the president of United Independent Movement, a man who spent 34 years in the African National Congress, speaking to BizNews as the ANC turns 113 today. Thank you, Neil. And I'm Chris Stain.